It's time for Lunch Hour Reviews.
He was licking me.
What?
He was licking me!
Lunch Hour Reviews.
This man ate until he burst.
So he did die by eating.
Lunch Hour Reviews.
I'm tainting me.
Tainting me!
It's feeding time.
I'm Darren.
And I'm Mindy, and we are the Rance Macabre, a part of the Fangoria Podcast Network. For more information about the network, including other programs, how to follow the show, and find past episodes of the Rance Macabre, please visit fangoria.com.
So today, on this Lunch Hour Review, we're going to be covering Dark Was the Night and some odds and ends of what we've been watching lately.
Yeah.
So let's jump in. Dark Was the Night came out in 2014, and I guess it had a small theater release, but I think everybody's caught it on Netflix.
I don't think I heard of it. Yeah, I hadn't even heard of it until I saw it on Netflix. They said I might like it, which usually is a dangerous proposal, but I did like it.
Well, you gotta stop watching terrible movies, because that's their indicator.
I will stop watching terrible movies when people stop making them.
Or at least rate them poorly, so Netflix knows
not to keep... I don't rate anything. That's my problem.
You gotta do that. Okay, so directed and produced by Jack Heller and written by Tyler Hissel, stars Kevin Durand, Lucas Haas, Bianca Kajlich, and the ever familiar Nick DiMicci.
He's in everything.
So it was originally titled The Trees.
Terrible.
But thank God they changed it.
Right.
That's
right.
A terrible title. A lot like M. Night Shyamalan's The Happening. It's not happening, it's not The Trees.
But
okay,
is
The Trees.
Yes.
But this is not, this is
this
a
has nothing
movie.
To do with The Trees.
No, which makes you wonder why they ever, I don't know. It would be a bad misdirect if they had stayed with that.
Well, yeah, because I told you I spent most of the movie thinking that the monsters were going to look like trees.
Might have been a cooler monster if it was
I
like
thought it was literally
the tree
like
people
tree
from
people.
Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, but like smaller, obviously. Not huge, you know, but like
go for either.
6 foot tall.
Yeah, but we're getting ahead of ourselves. Here's a brief synopsis from IMDb. Isolated and threatened, a mysterious force hidden within the trees outside the small town of Maidenwood strikes fear in the townspeople as Sheriff Paul Shields attempts to overcome the demons of his past while protecting those that he loves. Holy run-on sentences,
yeah,
IMDb.
You read that like almost like it was a bad movie, which it's not a bad movie, but the way that IMDb has
it's
like...
It's written like it's a bad movie.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, Wikipedia has more editing than IMDb, apparently.
It like wants you to make fun of it.
Yeah.
But and I don't want to. I liked it.
And it also like, I don't know, in that description, it sets the tone where like you're left wondering like, really? The sheriff's name is Paul Shields?
I told you like just a second ago, I told you I actually didn't get that.
Yeah.
I'm not good at
Welcome
stuff
to
like
literal
that.
Town.
I know. I'm not good at that apparently.
There's the local mechanic. His name is Rusty Fixit. And the bartender, Guy Pours.
Guy Pours.
So the movie does kind of play with the idea of like environmentalism and what happens when you cut down trees and what happened to live in those trees for, I don't know, centuries.
Yeah, I guess displacing natural habitat.
Yeah, so it does start on the sort of misdirect note of like the loggers, and the comedian Paul Agee makes an appearance. He's the bearded guy.
Yeah, and I keep going, is that the guy from Sarah Silverman? My husband's like, no, it's not. He was like dead serious, and then it became like an argument actually that we were having, and then I clearly proved him wrong.
I like to think that it was either like he gets the roles that Judah Friedlander is too busy to get in like bad B horror movies.
But I like him so much on Sarah Silverman. He was hilarious and charming and endearing.
Yeah. Kevin Durand plays the main character. And he's a familiar face. He's a character actor who's been in tons of stuff. He's a Canadian boy.
You see him all the time.
I was very surprised to find out that he started off as a Canadian comedian, but I will say, like, comedians more often than not show that, like, when it comes to, like, emotional gravitas and acting, like, they've got range. And so this guy, well, speaking of range, he played the Blob in the first Wolverine movie.
Range.
Which, that was a terrible movie. Don't watch that. But it's not bad because he's bad. He's great. But in any case, he was also on the FX show The Strain. And he was in Fruitvale Station, which I haven't seen yet, but
me
he's
either.
A cop.
I don't know if my heart can take it.
He's also in 310 to Yuma and Smoking Aces. In any case, he's been in everything. And he's very good. I think he's actually the driving force for the movie, and it's the reason the movie works. Because every once in a while, there's some dialogue that doesn't really sit well.
No.
And Lucas Haas isn't doing anybody any favors at times. It's kind
of most of the time. Yeah, he just I don't understand Lucas Haas. I don't quite get why he's there, but it doesn't matter. Kevin Durant is driving this film, yeah. And I think he does a really great job. You feel so sorry for him and so sad for him.
Yeah,
he's such a sad, sad person.
Sweetie, let's not talk about that right now, okay?
Why not?
Adam,
state your foot.
I don't want everyone to be sad anymore.
Who's sad?
I see you crying sometimes. You always pretend like you weren't, but I see you. Do you guys still love each other?
Adam, I don't think that this is the place.
Yes. Sometimes it's a little harder than that, buddy.
They set him up as, like, it's a little bit of a cliche of, like, the cop with a traumatic past who's kind of
It's a horribly trying to traumatic deal. Past, though.
Yeah.
He just has a lot of, like, of guilt, misplaced guilt, I guess. And he wears it the entire film. It's like clothing on him.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think in that way, it's actually beautifully acted because it's with him always, which it would be in real life. It would be something you could never not think of. It's probably spends his whole day thinking about it, just sitting there.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense. And it's not exactly a subplot, but the conversations had about, like, who's meant to protect who, and that involves Lucas Haas, and he's supposed to have been a big city cop, which,
yeah,
he's about as urban as Charlie Brown. Like, it's not...
You just want to pat him on the head. Just be like, well, they're there.
So here's a little bit of Darren's Trivia Corner. So the movie gets its title, Dark Was the Night. That's the first half of the line, Dark Was the Night, Cold Was the Ground. It's borrowed from an old hymn that was popular in the 19th century American South with Fasola singers. That was an education.
Yeah, I learned about that. I think it's a stupid thing. Continue on.
I know of it because it's the name of a Blind Willie Johnson song that I don't remember the first time I had heard it, but it definitely makes an appearance on an episode of The West Wing, and it's actually on the Voyager Golden Record. So this is kind of fascinating, and if you'll mind my non sequitur. Dark Was the Night and Cold Was the Ground is one of the 27 pieces of music on the Voyager Golden Record aboard the Voyager 1 and 2. There were two copies made. Carl Sagan explained why he included it, saying, Johnson's song concerns a situation he faced many times, nightfall with no place to sleep. Since humans appeared on Earth, the shroud of night is yet to fall without touching a man or woman in the same plight. Now, that record on the Voyager 1 has left our solar system behind and is the farthest-reaching man-made artifact. And that's it for Darren's Trivia Corner.
The more you know.
The director, Jack Heller, described a never-before-seen monster drawn from various pieces of American folklore. Now, the part of the story that I loved was the sort of mystery of a hooved beast that walks on two legs.
Right. And that's why I thought it was like the tree trunk feet. I thought they were like stick things. I really thought it was a tree monster, like, until I literally saw the creature.
I thought it was going to be like a Jersey Devil chupacabra scenario, because they do kind of...
Sure.
There's, you know, a lot of talk of, like, this cloven-hooved... Cloven-hooved? Is that how it's described?
I mean, but he doesn't really have very... even the prints he's leaving aren't very cloven. Like...
No.
It's just like a little round indent, like a little tree trunk's walking around.
It's a little random. They might have paid more attention to, like, the... whatever PA's job it was to, like, wear these big shoes.
Well, I mean, not everyone's, like, a tracker like Daryl Dixon. They just think, like, round thing, that's good, go.
Yeah, and it's leaving tracks throughout town, and in kind of a classic... monster movie scenario, it's like stealing dogs and horses.
I woke up an hour ago and saw them. They look like hoof prints from a horse. It's hard to tell, but
spacing's wrong.
Yeah.
One in front of the other. Like it's on two legs.
How's that even possible?
But in any case, that's when the movie's working the best, when there's a mystery, when you're not seeing it.
Right.
And every once in a while, you do get, like, a glimpse of something crossing headlights. And those moments are great.
Excellent.
I thought, if anything, like, leave in the shadows. I don't.
I always.
I don't need to see
that,
this
though.
Thing head on, and you do, and it's too kind much. Of ruins
a little too much. Because when I found out it wasn't a tree creature, I was like really kind of disappointed by it. I mean, I still loved the movie, and I did love the creature because he was something I guess I've never seen before.
I guess because it was a merging of a couple things, but...
It kind of reminded me of something that might be on, like, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles for a bad guy. Like, a Bebop Rocksteady kind of creature.
You know what it's starting... So, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the, like, new CGI ones, and also in the preview for Batman versus Superman, they've shown who everyone assumes is going to be the villain Apocalypse. Mm-hmm. It looks like your standard CGI monster.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which, I don't know. I guess it's like a, I don't know, a lizardy kind of Cloverfield monster.
Yeah, he's like a lizardy,
less interesting,
tree barky kind of lizard. More lizard than trees. I'm never going to let it go because I really wanted it to be a tree. Can someone please make a tree monster? I should have told Corin Hardy when we were talking to Corin Hardy. Next one, please make a tree monster. Thank you.
After the crow, please make a tree monster.
Yeah, I know you're busy with this crow thing right now, but tree monster.
So it's a pretty good looking movie, although they kind of go a little heavy with the blue, like blue sepia crime noir look.
It was really blue. It hurt my eyes.
It was unnecessary, I thought. It was like
I get that it's cold.
And it was only when they were outside. So
it
I guess
made
they
me wish for dark times. Because when it's dark, driving. They don't use that filter at all.
Or indoors. There's a very warm bar scene.
Yeah, where... I just want everyone to get inside because it's really bright. Like, radioactive out there.
So overall, I dug it. I think it really was saved by Kevin Durand.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know. Everything else.
I like the
else,
story. Love the ending.
I did like the ending. We talked about, like, what... assurances you can have at the end.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I'm ever the optimist.
And I am not. And I loved it. That's totally my style of ending. So.
Yeah. Yeah, but it works. Yeah. I really did dig it. So just in terms of stuff that's been on my periphery, while I was editing the I Love the 90s episode, which was way longer than I thought it was going
to really
be.
It was really long. We had a lot to say.
I was editing for quite a while. I was watching a lot of Twilight Zone episodes on Netflix, kind of off to the side, and I would sort of focus more here and there. But I was really compelled by how many stories I recognized as being influenced by. But
inspired, for sure.
Inspired by. But there were stories between Child's Play, It Follows, Final Destination, and or The Dead Zone with Christopher Walken, and Poltergeist. All these plots were established in the Twilight Zone between 1959 and 1964. And obviously, I'm not the first person to have this thought. Like, a number of articles have been written on the subject.
Right, right. And I told you that's how Lovecraft fans probably feel every day. Whenever they see anything, they're like, that was Lovecraft. That was Lovecraft.
It's like, Simpsons did it.
Exactly. And you're like, this is Twilight Zone. This is Twilight Zone.
So I thought it would be fun to grab a handful of Twilight Zone episodes and do a little bit of, like, compare and contrast with the movies that they clearly influenced. So that's something I'm looking for. We usually don't talk about future episodes just in case things don't completely come together.
And it also seems like people always occasionally if we would mention it, then someone would do it. And it's not because they heard us say it, but they just do it. And we're like, God damn it, I've done all this research.
And we're not spoiling anything, but there's plenty of stuff on the horizon we're working on. When this comes out, the second episode of this season 6, second half of The Walking Dead has come out. They should really just call it like season 7.
I'm getting annoyed with these half seasons and it gets confused. They did this with Mad Men and I was like, I don't even know what season I'm in right now. Please stop doing that.
It is season 6. Episode 1 was a barn burner. I was really pleased. I was surprised that there were a surprising amount of critiques online, but...
I told you it was awesome. I watched it when it happened because I am like on Twitter a lot and I just didn't want it to be spoiled. So I have to watch it as it's happening because I don't like to have things spoiled for me. It really pisses me off. I loved this. And I kept telling you need to watch it. Watch it right now.
I think I saw it like the day after. But so it seems like par for the course. Greg Nicotero directs the first episode of every season for a while now, it seems. This one was written by Seth Hoffman, and it felt epic.
Yes.
I was really surprised by like just how many full-blown zombies in like full states of decay there were, mm-hmm. just knowing that like on the production side, holy shit, that's a lot of work.
Right, right.
And then it didn't hold anything back in terms of like the gore and the sacrifices, and it very closely mirrored the comic, and that was pleasing for me because I was getting pretty tired of a couple characters.
I was ready to see a few people go. But I was so worried because I was reading, you know, other people before it aired, people were had gotten, you know, screeners and were writing about it, and they kept saying like, oh, someone's gonna die.
Yeah.
And whenever I read that, I think it's,
you think it's Daryl,
and I get really upset. I get like really upset, like really, and then I start like being like almost insulting to Norman Reedus, like you don't have anything if it's not for the show, like, but it's not, that's not true. But I get like really, I really want him.
You're
to
like
stay.
A spited lover.
I know. Don't you leave.
So,
but it wasn't Norman Reedus, so good.
Spoiler alert: Norman Reedus lives. After the fact, I say spoiler warning. So I'm really excited for this season to continue the way mm-hmm. it's going. They've established that the saviors are around, that Negan is definitely your head bad guy, and I do kind of like the element of building him up off camera.
Yep.
And the myth will begin, and when he eventually comes into play, it's going to get pretty ugly pretty fast. I'm a little concerned, I don't know, in terms of like shows that I'm excited for, there's not many. There's this and the X-Files, and so far the X-Files is been like 1 for 5 in terms of like what I've liked.
I disagree with that, but I would watch them do anything.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I thought that Reyes was going to join the party for a second, and I actually said it out loud. My husband's like, no, she's not, because I thought, like,
you should
Reyes,
check IMDb. Maybe she's scheduled to make an appearance.
I don't know. But, like, anyway, we can't get off on that. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Reyes and Doggett forever.
So here's where we request something from you, the listener.
Mm-hmm.
Mindy and I pay for this podcast out of pocket. Fangoria is a great help to us, but there is no money exchanged. Between the website and the hosting costs, not to mention the hours that we spend on production, it is like a second job. That's also an expensive hobby.
Mm-hmm.
If there's anything you, the listener, can do, it's share us with a friend. Hit the subscribe button on iTunes. Give us a review on iTunes or Stitcher.
So join us on social media at Rance Macabre on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram. And our website is therancemacabre.com.
Where you are going to start doing updates on what you're watching on a regular basis and maybe some brief reviews.
Since you said it out loud, like, I have to do something about it.
Pressure's on.
Yeah, but I watch a lot of garbage, guys. I'm giving you a fair warning.
Yeah. So the women in caskets do the segment so you don't have to.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that'll kind of be your written version of that.
Yeah,
we're like Leprechaun Origins.
No, you know what? Don't even get on that. We'll talk about Leprechaun Origins at another date, but don't even like go on there right now.
You've been listening to The Rance Macabre, a presentation of the Fangoria Podcast Network, produced by Darren Rosario and Thomas DeFeo, and edited by Mindy. Executive produced by Ken Hanley of Fangoria Entertainment. For press opportunities, advertising inquiries, and information about The Rance Macabre, contact Ken at fangoria.com. This is me, Darren, signing off.
And this is Mindy. Thanks.